Okay, I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting to order. We currently have 6 voting members by our record. So if we don't get 3 more voting members between now and the time we need to talk about the bylaws, then we're going to have to put the bylaws on the back burner. But we can still, by policy, be presented to. So we'll be able to go ahead and allow MHID to do their presentation. So at this time, I don't have any real announcements except for the fact that I'll probably be wanting to call a meeting earlier than February the 11th since we don't have a quorum. And I don't think it's really this time, I just don't think it's anybody's fault. We sent out two messages, but within today, I received like 3 messages of people were sick or their child was sick or et cetera, and they just happened to be voting members. So these voting members need to take better care of themselves. You know? So with that said, MHID is going to present 3 different things today, and we'll go ahead and give you guys the floor.
Sounds great. I think I've met most of you at this point. I'm a member of the committee. I'm Mark Henderson, the Deputy Chief Executive Officer for MHID. This is a cadre of our team members. We've got Andrew Collins, our Youth Director, and Rick Warren, who is our Mental Health Director. And Ms. Amy Kramer, who oversees our crisis services. So they're going to take it from here and tell you guys a little bit about the great work that they do.
Thank you. All right, so my name is Jessica. I'm going to get started. My role is the Behavioral Health Partnership Program Liaison. That's a mouthful, and I'll explain it, I promise. And then I'll pass it to Caitlin to talk about mental health first aid, and then to Amy to discuss crisis services. But if you all have any questions throughout, please stop me and let me know if I need to elaborate on something. So my role actually came out of a House bill of the 86th legislative session. So what that House bill did was directed local mental health authorities, which is MHID, to have a licensed professional that serves as a resource to school districts. I serve all school districts included in ESC2. So even though I'm employed here at MHID, I work with Coastal Plains Integrated Health, which is the local mental health authority for most of the counties around Nueces within ESC2, and also Camino Real, which is the local mental health authority up in McMullen County. So I serve all those school districts within, like I said, within the Education Service Center. My office is housed at the Education Service Center. So if anybody's ever down there for training, stop and say hi if the construction noise isn't too loud. So my responsibilities in this role, increase awareness of mental health and substance use disorders. I'll talk on another slide just about suggestions of topics, but really things can be tailored to whatever your school needs. I can assist with implementing different initiatives related to state laws and local ordinances, which we'll talk a lot about House Bill 3 with the youth mental health first aid context. Provide awareness of best practice lists offered by the Texas Education Agency. They have a Texas school mental health website, and they have a lot of things listed on there as far as resources. And so I create a newsletter each month that I send out to principals and school counselors. That highlights one of those resources each month. Promoting local, private, and public resources. So if schools are looking for different mental health or substance use resources for, to provide to their families, I can help them with lists of those things. Offer group services to school staff, students, and parents, and that's where we get into those trainings. I've done different professional development for teachers on in-service days. I've gone to different school districts and presented to groups of students on different topics. And I can also do parent things, in the evening, on the weekends, whatever you all need as far as that. And again, the professional development, mental health, substance use, grief and trauma, and then supporting children with intellectual and or developmental disabilities that are also suffering from grief or trauma. That sometimes is a population that gets neglected when we consider trauma and different things. So these are just suggestions or things that I've already done. Presentations, as I said, can really be tailored to what your school district needs. We talk a lot about mental health. I've gotten a lot of requests for suicide prevention. And so what I've done for that is just go through, talk about signs and symptoms and warning signs, as well as for parent groups, actually providing those questions. how you can broach this scary topic with your kids that doesn't make it seem quite so scary. So coping strategies, mindfulness, bullying, non-suicidal self-injury, vaping is another big one that we've gotten a lot of requests for this time, you know, this portion of the year. So those are just examples, like I said. I have pamphlets with my information on the back here. All of this information is in this pamphlet, so I will pass those out as well. A lot of my time recently has been working with Caitlin, who is going to go ahead and present next, to focus on youth mental health first aid in schools. Many people know already that House Bill 3 is going to require a mental health training for basically anybody that works in school districts at this point. And so youth mental health first aid, and she's going to talk about teen mental health first aid, are kind of ways to help meet those requirements.
And like she said, my name is Caitlin. I'm the mental health first aid training coordinator at MHID, and my job is to coordinate and instruct all of our mental health first aid courses. Now, mental health first aid is owned by the National Council for Mental Wellbeing. It originated in Australia in 2001. The National Council brought it over to the U.S. in 2011, and since then, 4 million students have been taught mental health first aid, which is really great. And I'm going to talk a little bit about our different programs and really what it is. So mental health first aid teaches you how to initially respond to somebody who's experiencing a mental health or substance use challenge, assist them in a non-crisis or crisis situation, and connect them to care. So we go over all those steps and how to recognize those signs and symptoms as well. So we have it in three different programs. We have our youth program, which teaches adults how to assist youth who may be experiencing a mental health challenge or crisis. Then we have our adult, which teaches adults how to assist other adults. And then our teen program, which is a little different. It's a peer program. It teaches teens how to help their friends who may be experiencing a mental health challenge or crisis. But for today, I'm mostly going to talk about youth, and then I will touch a little bit on teen. But youth is what we bring to the schools. And now why youth is so important to the schools is because 1 in 5 youth in the United States will have a mental disorder that significantly impacts their lives. So the chance of a teacher, a parent, you know, any worker of the ISD, the chances of them coming into contact with a student who will have a mental disorder is pretty high. So it's really important for them to know how to recognize those signs and symptoms and how to support them and connect them to care that they may need. So what participants learn are risk factors and warning signs of mental health and substance use challenges. We go on basic information on certain disorders like anxiety and depression. We talk about psychosis, trauma. We talk about a little bit about substance use as well. We teach a 5-step action plan on how to give mental health first aid. And then we also give self-help resources. So this is our action plan for mental health first aid. Like I said, it originated in Australia. So our mascot for mental health first aid is a koala, and his name is ALGI, and that is the acronym we use to give mental health first aid. Has anyone taken a CPR first aid class before? So you know how there's acronyms in CPR first aid? Same thing with mental health first aid. And same with our first step, which is assess for risk of suicide or harm. In CPR first aid, they teach you to always assess the situation, right? Same with mental health first aid. But you're not only assessing the situation, you're assessing for risk of suicide or harm as well. Our next step is to listen non-judgmentally. Our G is to give reassurance and information. Our first E is to encourage appropriate professional help. And our last E is to encourage self-help and other support strategies. ALGI is like the main theme of mental health first aid. We teach you how to do it in crisis and non-crisis scenarios. By the end of the day, you know ALGI really, really well. It is a non-linear plan. We don't always get through all of these steps. But like I said, you'll know it really well by the end of the class. And so our youth curriculum is what I'm going to talk about for now. But that one, by the end of the day, by the end of the training, you'll be able to describe the purpose of mental health first aid and your role as a mental health first aider. That's what you're considered after taking the class, a mental health first aider. You'll be able to recognize signs and symptoms of mental health challenges in youth, explain the impact of traumatic experiences and adverse childhood experiences on youth, and how important resilience is. You'll know how to apply the steps of ALGI in a non-crisis and a crisis situation. And then we talk a lot about self-care as well. Now with mental health first aid, we talk about self-care at the beginning of the day and at the end of the day. And the reason we do that is because you can't effectively help another person unless you help yourself first. So we talk about different ways that you can take care of yourself before you reach out to that youth that may need your help. So there's different ways we can teach mental health first aid. The one we suggest is the fully in person, because you get the most out of that one. It's 6.5 hours of training completely in person. But if someone doesn't have that 6.5 hours to provide, we have our blended version. So participants would do 2 hours of pre-work at that self-paced and virtual before the class. And then we do 4.5 hours in person or virtually. Now with our mental health first aid, we do have to have a minimum of 5 participants per class and a maximum of 30. Now we cap it at 30 because we talk about difficult topics like suicide, non-suicidal self-injury. So we have to make sure as instructors, we can take care of our class as needed as well. So we cap it at 30. At the end of the class, you take an exam and you are given a 3-year certificate. You are certified as a mental health first aider. Another thing we just learned when we met recently was that if you have that certificate, you are covered under the Good Samaritan law in Texas, which is really great news as well, because people have concerns about reaching out to other people who are having mental health problems, right? So then Jessica touched a little bit on House Bill 3. Here's exactly what it states, but really just the gist of it is that every ISD employee that interacts with a youth, and that could be teacher, counselor, bus driver, cafeteria worker, janitorial staff, all of them will be required to take youth mental health first aid. Now this bill was passed last September, but they're giving us some time to get it implemented. So before next year, before the 2025-2026 school year, 25% of ISD employees in the state of Texas will have to be certified in youth mental health first aid. Now luckily, Flower Bluff is ahead of the game. We are scheduled to teach 25% of ISD employees prior to that 2025-2026 school year, which is great because we are limited on the number of instructors we have, and that's got that 30 participant max. So it's great that Flower Bluff has gotten ahead of the game, because we're going to be really busy here soon, especially with our bigger school districts. But by the 28-29 school year, 100% of ISD workers will have to be certified in youth mental health first aid, and hopefully they use this as a onboarding training so that it's done before someone starts to work at the ISD. So besides just teaching schools, we do have community classes. We try to offer the community classes quarterly. And so quarterly we'll do a youth and adult class at one of our MHID buildings. It's free to the community, to whoever wants to take it. You know, parents, teachers, really anyone from the community who just wants the information is welcome to join our community classes. And it is free to the community, which is a really great part of my job as well, that we get to offer it for free. And mental health first aid is not just for mental health professionals, it's for the general community, because the chances of you running into somebody that has got an ongoing mental health challenge is going to be pretty high as well. And so this can help you assist your coworkers, your family members, really anyone you interact with. So this QR code is to the registration link for our youth mental health first aid class, which Jessica and I will be teaching next Wednesday at our youth building. If you want to know about community classes that are coming up, we often post them on our Facebook page. You can follow us on Facebook. And then we also post them on our website as well. And like I said, our next adult one will probably be, we're going to try to do one in February. And then I'm going to touch a little bit on teen. It's very different from our youth and adult program. Our teen program is for teens ages 14 to 18, so grades 9 through 12. Before we bring it to a school, at least 5% of the staff has to be trained in youth mental health first aid before we can even bring it to the school. And a staff member will have to be within the classroom with us when we are teaching it. We don't have the teens sit all day in a classroom with us. They have it separated into either 6 40-minute sessions or 3 90-minute sessions for those teens. We can also do that in person and blended virtual as well. We do host an information session for parents before we bring it to a school, because I'm sure parents have concerns regarding it, right? And a parent may opt their child out if they choose to do so. There are some barriers with teen, but we try to accommodate the best we can. We can't just pick and choose who we offer it to. If we're going to offer it to a grade, we have to offer it to the whole grade. So if we wanted to do ninth graders, we have to be able to offer it to the entire grade. And so we work with the school district to try to accommodate the best way to bring it to the school. And we just recently did a meeting with the National Council. We did find out that you can teach half of the grade in the fall semester and the other half in the spring semester, as long as everyone's done by the end of the year that hasn't opted out. And then we also provide makeup classes for those teens that may miss those classes. But any questions on any of this stuff I went through, I've got my phone number and my email address here. I've got some handouts on both youth and teen, and then my card as well. And like I said,
I have a question.
Yes.
Do we have any employees at the 5% for the teen class? Do we have very many employees at Flower Bluff that have been through that so far?
So far we have all of the counselors and I believe almost all of the nurses at Flower Bluff. And the resource officers are trained in mental health first aid.
Does that reach that 5%?
I'm not
the
positive.
The 5% is 5% of the total staff?
Yes.
Not 5% of the teachers.
Right.
So ballpark would be 40, because there's about 800 total staff. So I think.
Are we at that?
Yeah,
we
are. And if we are not quite there, we will be by the end of February.
We'll be way beyond
that
5%.
I know all
of us,
the counselors,
were
all trained.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions?
Except
for me.
I was trained, it's been a little longer than 3 years.
Oh, yeah?
It's time to come back.
Well, the thing with House Bill 3 is really great too, as, like I said, the certificate ends after 3 years, but ISD employees only have to be taught once. If their certificate expires, that's okay. They're still covered under House Bill 3, but if you'd like to be recertified, they can always reach out to us and we can make sure that happens.
So as far as House Bill 3 is concerned, once certified, always certified.
Yes.
I feel better about myself.
As of right now, it's early. Yes. And as long as it was taught by the local mental health authority.
Yes, it was.
Is there any plans for the principals and the assistant principals to go through?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Is there a timetable?
I'm in charge of the assistant principals, so I really want to get them through it as quickly as we can.
Like I said, we're going to do, we have a couple classes in February, and then 25% will be done by the beginning of August, is what we have scheduled so far.
Okay, that's excellent. Thank you.
We're stand up so I can see everybody. I can see my corner over here. So I'm Amy Kramer, I'm the Access Service Director at MHID. I oversee all the crisis points and all the access points into mental health services for adult. For crisis services, we serve ages 3 through end of life. So that's where the youth services are going to come involved. So if you're having crises in Flower Bluff at the school, it would be covered under the crisis services that fall under myself. So today I'm going to be talking about what is considered crisis services at MHID, which is going to be considered a mobile crisis outreach team, our crisis intervention team, and our crisis walking clinic. The mobile crisis outreach team and the crisis intervention team are community-based services, so those could be coming to you, but there's also a virtual aspect of that, so we can do it virtually or we can show up in person to provide you services and assist whoever's in crisis while they're in Flower Bluff. The crisis walking clinic is housed at our Brownlee Square location at 1542, 1446. always get those back. It's 1546 South Brownlee. So that would be a recommendation through the crisis assessment that's provided by one of the other two teams. And then if that is recommended, you would come to the physical location and we would walk you through that crisis walk-in clinic. We do work in conjunction with CCPD and Avail Solutions to provide the 24/7 services. The crisis intervention team partners with the CCPD aspect of it, and the mobile crisis outreach team partners with the Avail Solutions aspect. I do have case managers in training, so I'm hoping by beginning of January, beginning of February, we'll have case managers through CIT available 24/7. So that's coming soon. But right now, the CIT case managers are 8 a.m. to 11 p.m., 7 days a week. Our goals through our program is to assess and evaluate individuals, to assist them where they're at, stabilize the crisis as fast as possible through the least restrictive route possible as well. We're not trying to remove them out of the community. We want to keep them at home. We want to keep them in school if possible. Provide psychiatric care. Oh, there's the third one. Crisis resolution. Link and refer to appropriate resources, however that may be, to support the family and the individual in crisis. And reduce the inpatient and law enforcement interactions. We want to keep them out of the hospital, out of the ER, out of incarceration. And then I put the crisis hotline number there at the bottom, so that would be the number that avails solutions. If you're calling the local psychiatric hotline number, it doesn't matter who calls or when they call, the next morning at 8 a.m. we're checking those logs. We have access to all of them. We call all those individuals back. So my case managers would be calling them. If it's a youth, we would call the family, ask what happened, why did you call in, what's going on. We get a little bit of a note of why they called. So even if you're like, you can't sleep or you're having trouble with homework, things like that, you're feeling stressed out, we're going to call you back and offer resources, link you to the community as much as possible, offer a crisis assessment. So I encourage people to call that number as much as possible. And I think, yeah, it's on the handout. So the workflow handout, I'm just going to walk through it. So when you identify a person in crisis, you would assess their imminent risk for danger, so they a danger to themselves or others. If you're in, you determine they're not in imminent danger to themselves or others, but they are in a crisis state, then calling the local hotline, the Avail Solutions hotline number. They're going to do a brief screening with you, an assessment, and they're going to label it urgent, emergent, or routine. Routine means we'll follow up with you within 24 hours. If it's urgent or emergent, they're going to be dispatching the MCOT. The case managers will be calling you. So they'll be calling you to figure out what's going on with the scene, what's happening. Is it best, do we need officers on the scene for safety, or can we just come out and assess? If it's a youth, they're going to want parents' information as well, so we can call parents to make sure we have consent to come out and assess their child. All that's taken care of in the office, so when we arrive on the scene, we can immediately start that assessment. If anything hinders that, if parent declines or anything like that, we will call you back. We'll let you know that parents declined. We offer resources, services. We can give as much information as assistance as possible, but we wouldn't be able to give a recommendation on how to proceed at that point. So if you complete the screening with Avail Solutions, they follow up within 24 hours. So that kind of worked that way. If you go the imminent risk route, so if you assess them, they're at imminent risk of themselves, of hurting themselves or others, they're suicidal, they're homicidal, they're self-injuring, we request call 911, you can request a mental health unit. So requesting a mental health unit is going to have one of the CIT officers show up on scene. I have one officer on the street who does have a case manager who rides with them. So they're in the vehicles when they arrive, you would have an officer and you would have a case manager, and we do it in person. If a CIT officer shows up and there's not a case manager with them, they have the virtual aspect of it. So they have everything through our Cloud9 app to talk to our case managers that way. If we arrive on scene and there's the virtual officer, they have the device and it's just not working, or it's just, you know, the individual's not progressing or accessible through the app, we will still come out on scene. So they'll just call us and let us know, like, hey, can you just head out? We'll be there.
And this is the element, Mr. Crenshaw, that we had talked about in our previous meeting, where we can integrate that with Chief Garcia.
Yes.
And his team for the other resource officers, so that they have those devices here on campus. And at the push of a button, they can access our staff to help them do their job.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I can say one of your officers actually was one of our CIT officers, yep. So he talks about it all the time. He'll call us out if they have a situation.
So he was one of the officers we got from, I guess, CC?
From the Sheriff's Department.
From the Sheriff's Department.
Yeah.
Okay. So I guess regarding that, I just want to talk about next steps, you know, in the future. I mean, in the very near future.
So very near future, what that would look like is we get assigned tablets. It'd be no cost to the district, and deploy them. And essentially, you just got to use them.
So those officers would need, you need a little time with them to deploy them and kind of talk through?
Probably half a day, or a day at most, to make sure that their login credentials are set up.
Okay.
Amy and her team have the ability to troubleshoot any questions, how to operate the application. It's very simple. It's really user-friendly. You have kind of a red, yellow, green next to our staff members.
It's actually on the handout too, yeah. Just so you can kind of see what it looks like on the response, their responder support. And so you'll have a list. This is just what it looks like when you pull it up, but on the far right, you'll see how there, a lot of them are in red. It means that they're unavailable on an assessment, but then you'll see that last one down there is green. So that shows that they're available. So, you know, quick glance, you know, who's available, push it.
And then that connects.
I'm logged in right now, you can see. So they're green. So I could call any of these and they can do an assessment. These people are not available.
So you have the option for messaging, you have the option for telephone and for virtual.
It's not like a
So it cuts down like the 30 to 45 minute wait of waiting for someone to drive out to school.
I have to say, I actually had to call. I had a patient that was suicidal in my office and was flat refusal thing. And I called, I believe I called 911 or had my nurse call 911. And somebody was in my, there was two in my clinic within 10 minutes to assess that patient. And then they came up with a safety plan. I was fairly certain she was, you know,
yeah,
a little touch of drug seeking, a little touch of crazy, all mixed together. Bless her heart. I love her. She's sweet. But
so
she's
just for clarity for this group, the piece of this that Shaq would be looking at approving would be when we decide to do the teen program, because that would be considered curriculum for the teens.
Right.
This mandated House Bill 3 and what we're doing here, this doesn't need to go before a vote of this committee whatsoever. This is informational because the state of Texas is requiring this. And then as far as your assessment piece goes, it's informational too, because it is not curriculum and not underneath the purview of this committee.
Right.
But we want the committee to really understand how that works. And more than anything, we need to do a real push about counselors, assistant principals, everybody understanding how it works so they can utilize it, you know, correctly.
And the biggest advantage of it, Mr. Crenshaw, is that unlike a lot of interactions of this type, it's not one and done, because a lot of times what ends up happening is you have somebody that's trained, maybe they're mental health first aid trained, or they, you know, they've gone to the school counselor or the nurse, and there's not an inbuilt treatment option. So you can give a referral, or if it's an imminent danger, somebody, you know, has taken an act that to harm themselves, they've swallowed a bottle of Tylenol in the bathroom, whatever it is, they're going to go to the ER. ER is going to watch them for 8 hours, and then maybe they get some follow-up care.
In 90 days.
If that.
They'll send a referral to us.
Or they'll send a referral to us, and they may never get there, because 99% of the time, unless it's through this system, the ERs aren't even going to tell us about it.
And another thing from my experience why this is good is because educators are educators.
Right.
Right? And even counselors are educator counselors, you know.
Sure.
They're not LPCs.
Right.
And this really helps have someone on the line that is able to make that determination.
Right.
In other words, if you're saying right now, well, I think I want to contact you guys and we're going to go through this, it can quickly be elevated to to based on the assessment.
Right.
You know?
And that assessment's going to connect into a system of care. They can they can treat that child and the family. And of course, there's an element of choice there. But even if they choose not to be in our system of care or our services, we're going to connect them to wherever they choose to go. It's not going to be a here's an appointment card, we'll see you later, good luck.
Right.
And I think that's the greatest advantage, is because if you engage that system of care, it wraps around the family and the child and sees it through to the end. And that may be, depending on what the child's dealing with, a lifelong journey of recovery for them. So it just depends. But that's, I always want to highlight that, because inevitably when we give these presentations, a lot of times people walk away thinking that it's just a one and done deal. And it's not, because after that connection's made, you're engaged in an ongoing system of care.
That's awesome. And these assistant principals, and we have our own internal documents, right? We have a behavioral threat assessment that's required, and we'll, of course, continue to go through that. And then if it was self-harm, we have our own forms there. But an assistant principal or a regular counselor really struggles to make that decision sometimes of saying, oh, we don't think you need to go somewhere.
Right.
You know, so this support is tremendous.
Right, and then the last thing I want to highlight with the entire thing is many people aren't familiar with the type of organization that we are. We're one of 39 that cover all 254 counties in Texas. A lot of times we come and we give a presentation like this and people walk out thinking, well, yeah, this sounds like a great way for them to funnel business to themselves. It's not about business. We're an agency of the state of Texas, a unit of government, and a nonprofit. We're a provider of last resort. This is not a money-making venture for our organization. It's a community. It's public health. Mm-hmm. And so I just want everybody to understand that, because a lot of times if you're not familiar with our organization or what we do, people come out and they say, why are we having a presentation on how we can feed patients to these guys? Because mm-hmm. people look at it through a business sense. But I just want to be clear that that's not the goal here. The vast majority of the services that we provide are unfunded. We're already paid for by public funds. So.
Great.
So what's ISD's plan on implementing all this?
Well,
how quickly?
We've worked with MHID for a long time,
right.
Really. So the piece about using MHID to help with assessment, we're not strangers to that already. We just need to, I think, make that be more robust.
Yeah.
And then as far as mental health first aid, it's rolling. I mean, we have to get to 25%, and we're already working, and these folks have already contacted Dr. Barganski, who is our person who is in charge of counselors, and we're rolling. And I'm going to get rolling on the APs. So it's rolling. The thing that this committee needs to decide to do is, do we want to do the curriculum for the team? And if we do, then we need to have another meeting and say, we'd like to put that in as a curriculum. Yes, ma'am.
What outcomes have you guys seen with the curriculum that's already been given to students in different schools?
The mental health first aid curriculum?
Mm-hmm.
For teens?
Yes.
Are you talking about when you train the teens or when you train the teachers?
Yeah, the teens.
The teens.
What we're voting in.
Do you want to talk about what you've taught the teens first?
Peer-to-peer.
Outside of mental health first aid, I've done presentations at a couple school districts specifically on suicide prevention. And so what I did was created a story about a 16-year-old and made them go through and pick out, okay, these are those kids' risk factors. These are the warning signs. So if I'm looking at one of my friends, these are the things I need to be looking out for. I've also done some internet cyberbullying, like internet safety cyberbullying stuff with some high school students. So those were kind of the topics, but as far as teen mental health first aid, I personally am not certified in that yet.
So with teen, we've heard a lot of stories of, you know, the 30 teens in that class are strangers from the beginning, and then they are like best friends by the end of it. They really learn how to work together and help each other, and they really want the information. Our teens now are more open to talking about mental health than maybe our generations were when we were younger. Our teens know a lot more about mental health than we did, and they're really open to talking about it, and they really enjoy learning about it and helping each other.
I think my daughter's gonna be a mental health professional the way she talks about it.
Yes.
Mom,
yeah, they know a lot.
They don't have the stigma. Like, they don't make, you know, if a kid when we were younger would have said they were anxious, that would have put a big target on their back. But kids now aren't like that.
Mm-hmm. It's the closest level, though. Peer-to-peer, that's ground level.
Yeah.
Teachers, yes, we look in, or other people look in, but
they know each other so
well,
much better.
Well, and who are they going to go to first?
And,
right. Each other.
Yeah, they're not coming to us first.
And it's sad, but honestly, I think it needs to even go lower, maybe even junior high kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because that's, I mean, my daughter's an eighth grader, and I mean, that's all I hear about at dinner table is, you know, oh, this friend's this, yep. this friend's that, and I'm just like,
right.
Oh, I mean, it's scary. It is scary what I hear, you know, and it's, they need help.
I think you're right, and that's what our children's consortium that we just came back from with everyone around the state was saying. They felt it even needed to be maybe introduced at the end of elementary, because by the time they get to middle school, they're seeing issues that probably could have been prevented if they would have provided the education sooner.
So we're teaching the students how to identify mm-hmm. Risk factors in their friends and other things. Once those are identified and they raise the flag and they're like, hey, I'm worried about this person, mm-hmm. that's when these iPads and these things, that's when that comes into play.
It could.
So the contact points are parent. Contact points are going to be counselors for this? I mean, the peer-to-peer goes to a counselor, goes to anybody that's trained, teachers.
All great questions, and to wrap it into kind of a perspective bundle here, you have multiple layers. The first aid component is about awareness, identification, and the openness and willingness to have a conversation about what you see in your friends or what a staff member or a teacher sees in their students. From there, what that course teaches you is just like CPR or other basic physical first aid, is what are your next steps? So the next step is get this person connected to a resource that's going to be able to address whatever it is that they're dealing with. So the two biggest outcomes to your question are destigmatization mm-hmm. and openness and willingness to create a pathway towards clinical treatment that's a collaborative process. And so on a higher acuity level, that's when you would activate those iPads. That's somebody who's expressing active ideation of suicidality, homicidality, or their level of functioning has decreased to the point that you're afraid that they're a risk to themselves or somebody else. And so you think of it like three different tiers. One is preventative in the education of mental health first aid. But the second part of mental health first aid is interventional, because it teaches people how to begin that process to intervene. The more crisis-oriented response system is, hey, there's a massive problem. We need help right now.
And I'm assuming that what the kids would be trained to do is go find a trusted adult.
That's right. The word we use, is a trusted adult. Whether that, for whoever that trusted adult is for that teen, whether it's the parent, a specific teacher, whoever that trusted adult is for that teen, because they're not going to go to a stranger most of the time and tell them about everything that's going on. They're going to go to that trusted adult. Yeah. So we use that phrase specifically.
And that's why it'll be good that the staff's trained in youth mental health first aid, because when that teen then comes to them, they know what to do with it.
Right, and there's credibility to it because they've been trained. And so it allows for some seriousness to be given, because I think there's still a large undercurrent of pull yourself up by the bootstraps, get over it, it's not that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we've all seen this, and I'll just speak on a personal level of having worked in this field and in this community for 15 plus years, is oftentimes if you intervene when it seems like they can just pull themselves up by their bootstraps, you don't get to the point where they're swallowing a bottle of pills in the bathroom. And so that to me is the biggest advantage of having the educational component. It's the awareness, the willingness to destigmatize it and do something with it. It can be, kids are tough. I was a master trainer in applied suicide skills intervention for a number of years, and the biggest thing that the research behind that curricula teaches is that at the end of the day, the people that need the help, they're not asking the LPCs and the LMFTs and the psychiatrists for help. By the time they get there, a lot of bad stuff has already happened in this person's life. They're asking their friends, their parents, their teachers, clergy, what have you. So if you have a pathway to treatment with the people that are getting those initial conversations, research tells us that earlier you intervene, the better the outcome.
I have a question, Mark.
Yeah.
Okay, I am the LPC
right.
for the high school. So my question is, all the other schools do not have an LPC. Would their counselors be getting these
right.
iPads?
We've had those conversations. We haven't had takers with CCISD early on. We continue to circle back around.
Okay.
I think that's where Flower Bluff would be the first to adopt this, and the Coastal Bend, anything like it that I'm aware of.
There's like a higher education that is doing it right now that rolled out because there was an increase in volume. So they're now on board with it. They've been working with us for a while. So we just rolled out the virtual option with
because
them.
Because they will call me from the middle school occasionally to deploy me over there.
And this keeps it from what happens when Brenda's not there.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Brenda's only one person. And then other districts don't even have a Brenda. And so at least now you have an army of tools with our staff behind it. To maybe you don't have the LPC there, but you have somebody that can get you to one.
And teachers and counselors, everybody's working hard and cares. But I'll tell you this. It's been my experience that where the rubber meets the road is the assistant principal.
Sure.
Yes.
That's always who I saw first when I got in trouble.
And attendance and discipline in these things are symptoms.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So these folks wind up with the assistant principals.
Right.
And assistant principals, whether they have the formal training or not, they've been in the business long enough. Those guys are doing the hard work of this district. I'll say that in front of them or to anybody that'll listen, they're doing it.
So how do you deploy this, like the teen first aid? Is it like something they would do during advisory period, once a week,
so
or 6 weeks?
So the teen first aid component, just in the interest of being as open and honest as we can, we're not offering that at present, correct?
Mm-hmm. No, we haven't.
The state has very limited trainings on that. It's something we plan to do in the near future and to be able to offer that.
Okay.
Which part of the reason we wanted to bring that discussion here now. But it's not something that is currently available because the state is one or two trainings a year.
Yeah. So I've talked to other local mental health authorities who do it. Like I said, the whole grade aspect is our biggest barrier because how many kids are in ninth grade in Flower Bluff?
About 500, right?
About 600.
Yeah, so that we would need, that's a lot of classes of 30 and there's only, five instructors within MHID. So there are some barriers that way. But we would, it would require, a couple meetings and how we can make this work.
Like if we plan this for maybe next year,
yeah.
So say we have SHAT approved or not approved over here. And then if it is approved, I see it being able to go through the freshman social emotional learning class.
Mm-hmm. The
MAPS
classes.
Yeah.
And those groups of kids are already have already formed these bonds with the teacher, and so I think it could be a real natural there.
So yeah, we would have like an instructor do six classes a day of 30 different kids, right? And so the classes, whether it's the 6 45 minute, there just has to be a day in between the classes, but no more than 2 weeks between the six sessions.
Right.
So normally schools do one a week.
Gotcha.
Do one a week. And so, and like I said, we have the whole school year to make sure that it's offered to the entire grade.
Yeah.
So which is really great too.
So at this point, I really do appreciate the information. And then what we'll do is when we have a quorum, we'll talk about the teen piece.
Yeah, I think next year would be a great goal for us. Is next year we can get prepared for and get as many instructors trained in it as we can, and we can figure out how to best implement it for next year. I think that would be a good goal.
Now, could the teacher, could the MAPS teacher be trained as an instructor?
Yes.
And they want to be. I know they want to be.
Yes. Well, there you go.
They want to be.
Relatively expensive. But if the school district is willing to, it's available to anyone who wants to do it.
And Mr. Crenshaw, would you need a copy of the actual training curriculum itself?
That would be good because what I'll want to do, we've got some time with this committee because we're going to try to get this approved for next year, right?
Yeah.
So next time we get together, it'd be good to have the curriculum so that this group could look at it and then make a decision about it. Everything else that you guys talked about was just us getting busy administratively and making it happen. So I'm meeting with the assistant principals tomorrow. I'm going to visit with them informally about what we talked about today. And then I'd like for if at all possible, you guys to come out and talk to our IEPs and let's get them
yeah, going. I think this is a great place to bring that information I'm a parent as well with two kids in the district, and I would want to know that this exists, or at least have an opportunity to hear from my fellow community members that it was going to be offered. What is it about? What's happening? So I think it's a good thing to start the conversation.
And the way to get
them. So you mentioned that this is the first aider training. That'll be for next year. But you mentioned you teach other classes. So those other classes are something that we can implement maybe before then.
Yeah.
And that's something I really want to highlight as well, if I can, which is what Jessica does, because since that role has been created by the state of Texas and we've received funding for it, it, in my opinion, is very underutilized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it's a huge resource for districts that doesn't get utilized as much as it really could be.
Absolutely. And to your point, you know, teen mental health first aid is great, but it doesn't work under 14, or is the youngest, right?
Yes,
the youngest. So, you know, at elementary, we can start with feelings identification. Simple. Nothing, you know, nothing too big, but that's something that they need to know. And then as you get older in middle school, then you can start to talk more about the, you know, the specific mental health challenges and things like that. And then with that way, by the time they get to ninth grade, maybe they already have a working.
So all we would need to do with that is for you guys to put together some sort of like what we call, if we're talking anywhere close to the same language, a scope and sequence. At this level, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And
Jessica's role is designed specifically for that.
Yep.
Support districts in bringing curriculum like that into a district with oversight and approval and through committees like this.
That's great.
And personally, I mean, I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I have been for 11 years. My background prior to this, I spent 8 years as a school social worker. So education, special education, that's kind of like my jam.
Okay.
So, but let me pass this out while they mention.
She's also somebody that any of your cadre can call.
Yeah, that AP at the elementary school, is he working out? You can tell me. It's my husband.
So keeping us moving along here, all of you guys at MHID, would you write down my email?
Sir, I've got.
Okay.
And I'll share it.
Email me so we can really start working with the APs and et cetera. We'll get that done. I want to send you home with your copy of the SHAC bylaws. But I don't want to get too into it because we don't have enough folks here to create a quorum and pass it. It's been worked over and thought about pretty hard, and I think it's a pretty good document. So just be ready to talk about it the next meeting, and we'll shelf that for now. And then I guess the next thing we can do is just go around the table. Does anybody have any comments or questions or concerns?
You mentioned about the iPad, about having an iPad or something?
That's for crisis.
Okay, but it's an application though, right? I mean, they could put it on the cell phone, or does it have to be on an iPad for?
They could put it on their cell phone.
I mean, because you had it. I was thinking that was so convenient having it on your phone. So that way, if you have contacts, and people seem to always have teachers, counselors, always have this somewhere, it seems
somewhere
like.
Near, yeah.
So it's so nice. Oh my gosh, we have something going on.
Into it,
okay, so it is an application. Okay.
Another thing to think about, too, is secure messaging. So, say your counselors have it, how you said it's hard for them to make that call, if they should call or not, you can secure message the team and stuff like that as well.
That's awesome.
So there's a consultative.
I think it's good for you all.
I've sent kids over to
and it's a free service, so why don't you guys for the entire time?
For services, for extra services.
I think it's
good.
I think it's very important.
So if you will reach out to me.
Homeschool is required under the Texas law to provide this all school.
The
first
aid.
House Bill 3, does that cover homeschool?
I think it's only ISD.
No, okay, thanks.
I think one person with children
now, I think it's better. We can still teach it to whoever wanted.
All right, thank you.
Were there any questions before these guys leave?
Any questions?
You can get on the website, right? To
sign up, Caitlin, for your Fresh State class, do we just go on the website?
For
February?
For the one that's next month?
Do you want me to put it back?
No, for February.
Yes, on our website or on our Facebook page.
Okay.
It'll be on there.
Got it. All right.
Does anybody want to take a picture of the viewer?
Oh, sorry. I can reopen it. This one's, me and Jessica are teaching the youth class next Wednesday, and we have about 15 spots left for that one.
And what's the age limit on that one again?
For the youth, so you have to be above 18 to take the class, and you're going to learn how to
serve. So you have to think about it.
Youth
is that you're helping youth. Teen is your teen helping.
Yes, and then adult, you're helping.
It took me a while when I started overseeing, and I was like, it's a lot. So youth are doing it.
So we also teach at the ESC monthly.
Okay.
So if you want to register with the ESC as well, me and Jessica teach there almost monthly.
That next one is for that is January 23rd. If you get that newsletter that I sent out, the QR code's on there.
Okay.
So that if those ones work better, we've got one every month until May there. So if those ones work better for your schedule, you can go ahead and register for those.
It doesn't matter. Well, it does. Since I'm the only mental health counselor in the high school, it does.
Great job, y'all. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
Bye-bye.
We'll
reach out. Yeah, thank you.
We're at
remarks. Anybody have any final remarks?
Just thank you for letting our team come in and provide that information.
Thank you for reaching out to us.
It was an excellent.
So, Ms. Yerkes, mine's Mark. Everybody that works at this school, like, mental health is the biggest need right now, correct? Like, I know at the beginning of the Shack meeting last time, you were saying that this is what we really need to focus on.
You mean as far as this committee?
As far as, like, the needs for the school for this committee.
I think it's definitely one of our biggest needs.
I mean, it's huge. You guys would know,
it's huge. Yes.
So, like, I mean, just for me, I know budget-wise, this is almost a no-brainer. You know, this is a great approved curriculum.
I agree. I see about 8 to 12 kids a day.
Yeah. And you could probably do 5 times that.
Which one are you speaking about? Are you speaking about the teen or the...
I'm talking about, in general, everything that they offer.
It's really a no-brainer, and it's really not too much that's going to be approved from this committee. The only thing that's going to be approved from this committee is...
The team, but also the classes that Jessica offers. They're listed on this thing. Because that's already up and going, because the first aid training thing doesn't, they're not even ready to offer that till next year.
Right.
But these classes that she offers, she can offer those now.
Right. Okay.
If she'll give us the scope and sequence, we can jump in. What I'll have her do is send those core curriculums to you, Mr. Grinch, so you can distribute it to the committee or however you want to do that.
Sure.
Just let me know, and then I'll get a copy of the state teen MHFA curricula and
see
that as well.
That's perfect.
Even for cost wise, it should be
very good. 100%. There's some even that I would go to.
How do I protect my child?
Those positions were created by a Senate bill specifically to be a resource for districts.
I'm just curious what that is.
That's great.
Well, they mentioned the cost of it.
I hear about it.
For the cost of this, is it just mainly for the instructors or if it actually comes out to teach? What is the.
There's no cost.
Somebody mentioned there's expensive to do something. I wasn't sure what that was.
To become a trainer, there's a cost associated with
that.
So, for example, we have funding from the state for Caitlin and Jessica, and we have 5 other trainers that will have cross-trained in that particular curriculum as well. So that cost, there's a cost to becoming a trainer, but cost to the district is zero.
What is the cost for ish to become a trainer?
I can't remember off the top of my head, but I want to say it's around 10 grand.
Per person?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and adjourn.
Sounds good.
And I'll get back with the committee pretty soon about when we need to get back together and get us some bylaws approved.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you.